I needed to talk about what's going on in the world with the what I call cartoon violence, the violence that has been provoked by the cartoons that were published in Denmark back in September and then republished as the riots grew and the publicity and the violence has fed on each other and gotten bigger and bigger, more distorted and more, I think, misunderstood and unmanageable. Here's the good news, and I'll cut to the last paragraph of the sermon, although you don't get to escape everything in between. I'll get back to it. And that is, I don't have the answers. This is a very tough issue where rights come into conflict with each other. And it's a conflict between free speech and hate speech, between our rights to express ourselves and what constitutes, in the legal sense in America, but in the larger sense in the world, fighting words. And it's a tough call in the middle. For me, it's not a tough call at the extremes. It seems self-evident to me that burning down embassies or churches or newspaper offices and threatening the lives of reporters, cartoonists, publishers, people who work in embassies, people who work for Danish companies, is an inappropriate response to a symbolic but important act of insult. Now let's go back to the beginning for a second, or actually for a couple of minutes, because it's worth it. Some Danes were concerned that in an overabundance of political correctness, that to mix a metaphor, I apologize, that Muslims had become sacred cows, and you could lampoon whites, you could lampoon Americans, you could lampoon Christians. If there were Unitarians, you probably could do that too. But you couldn't say anything that would upset a Muslim. In order to test and to challenge this, an intentional provocation was launched by someone that said, see what you can do about making kind of the most in-your-face provocative editorial cartoons about Muslims, maybe even about Muhammad. This was meant to provoke, and it worked. A couple of things to understand in terms of what happened next. This happened in September. Most of us didn't hear about it until maybe 10 days ago. Because although it was a minor scandal in Denmark when these about 8 cartoons were published, and yes, I have seen them all, and some of them seem relatively inoffensive, some of them are meant to give offense, and it worked. Both sides have been intentionally provocative. The Danes in saying, well, can you write some, draw some really in-your-face cartoons, and will our papers have the guts to publish them? The answer was yes and yes. But then, recently in the Middle East, some cartoons have been circulated that were represented as being among the cartoons published in Denmark, and they were not. These were intentional provocations now by some of the imams, mullahs, and political figures, and again, to get people angry and to get their minds off of their own problems and get them on to some enemy out there, whether it is the American Zionist Christian Crusaders, who happen to be Danes for some reason. I'm a little confused about that, as I am about the sacred cows and the Muslims, but that's okay. In other words, there is, in a sense, some mutual provocation that's going on for political reasons. But there are also some things that, for the most part, Americans don't understand about Islam. Islam, like its cousin religion, Judaism, holds certain objects and words to be totemic. If I write a swastika on the wall of a temple, I have desecrated that temple. But if I harm a Torah, I have done something that is a much higher degree of offense. When Qurans were said to have been desecrated in Afghanistan and in Iraq, Muslims were infuriated, but the model is not to understand that in terms of our Bibles. Our Western Bibles, for the most part in English, except for those who read it in the language of Jesus, which my Danish friends claim, well, my Lutheran friends claim it's Danish. Our Bibles are sacred texts, but they tend, with the exception of in court, where you swear on it, not to be totemic, not to have a particular sacredness intrinsic in the pages. That's not true in Muslim tradition, and it's not true in Jewish tradition. When a Torah wears out, when prayer shawls wear out, even when a prayer book wears out, they are given burial. And with all of the dignity that you would give to a human being who has died. The Quran is seen the same way. Both Judaism and Islam have prohibitions against pictorial representation of prophets, of people, and even for the ultra-Orthodox of both faiths, of animals. The reason for this, first of all, comes from the Ten Commandments, which are hidden there behind the "we don't have to think alike to love alike," but one of them in the Jewish formulation, which is accepted within the Muslim formulation, is "thou shalt make no graven images." In other words, to draw a picture of a person is already transgressive in Islam. I'll get to the exceptions. To draw a picture of the Prophet Muhammad is very transgressive. There are two main reasons for this. One is the fear of idolatry, that these pictures, you know, it's kind of dancing can lead to other things in the Baptist tradition, that these pictures could lead to idolatry. And it's equal and opposite, which is they could lead to the desecration of those pictures. So in the Muslim tradition, as in the Jewish tradition, if you have written the word God, you can't just throw that away or leave it on the floor or put it in a scrap heap. It has a value beyond how we see it in the basically the Anglo-American tradition. And so these cartoons were in themselves, even if they had been flattering, an insult to the Orthodox. Now, let's change sides a little bit again. Orthodoxy also picks and chooses in every kind of religion, and fundamentalists pick and choose what's going to be fundamental at a particular point in time. And so one of the things that you may have noticed, having just told you that in Islam you're not supposed to have pictures of people, some of you may remember Persian miniatures and pictures of people and animals. And how does that happen? The answer is, I don't know. I think it happens the same way that my sainted great-grandmother used to go into delicatessens and ask, could I have just a little sturgeon sandwich, because if it's little, it shouldn't cost as much as a big one. And so if it's a miniature, how big a sin could it be? When you get into big pictures, maybe that's a threat. But the truth is that in the traditions of Shia Islam, which is about 12% of the Muslim population, and particularly in the Persian tradition, there is a tradition of pictorial representation which goes against the Quran. You also see it in Sunni communities where there are pictures of Osama bin Laden, where there are pictures of Yasser Arafat, where there are all kinds of pictures of the martyrs who have died, who have martyred themselves blowing people up. And they are pictured again. The political seems to trump the religious in many cases. So everything I told you about the prohibition is true, but there are also lots of exceptions when it comes to real life and real death. Now, I am troubled also, and this is troubled by the double standard of the exquisite sensibilities in the Muslim community, because there is no restriction on the caricaturing of Jews in the Arab press, and using hateful caricatures directly lifted from Nazi propaganda and directly lifted from medieval anti-Semitic texts. And I think for most human beings, there's an implied social contract, if you will, a golden rule to treat others as you would have them treat you. And so while I am not defending the caricaturing of the Prophet Muhammad, I think it was wrong, I'm also not endorsing being held captive to the most exquisite sensibilities and sensitivities of people who don't pay back in kind, but pay back in unkindness. I think this whole heated exchange, and by heated I mean heated literally, needs to be calmed down, and that it's important not to spill blood over symbolic issues, but those symbols are very strong, and there are things called fighting words, and it isn't just oversensitive Muslims who are sensitive to symbolic desecrations. Every couple of years, as elections approach, someone tries to get an anti-flag burning amendment passed to the Constitution, as if burning flags was one of the clear and present dangers to our democracy, and it's a wonderful distraction. I don't like seeing our flags burned. I don't want to see hate speech and people calling each other racial and religious and gender and sexual epithets at each other. It's bad. It's unkind. But the question is, should it be recognized as illegal, as evil, and as hate speech? And those are hard questions. Is having a t-shirt with the number of dead so far of Americans in Iraq a form of unacceptable speech? Well, it was to Capitol policemen who wrestled with some unnecessary force and violence Cindy Shaheen out of her seat at the State of the Union. Is an editorial cartoon, whether tasteful or tasteless, should it provoke the Joint Chiefs of Staff to bug the cartoonist, threaten the publisher, or just send a letter to the editor? And is a letter to the editor from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, is that intimidation of the press? And does it have a chilling effect on the freedom of speech, of imagination, of creativity? These are questions that are important, but for me do not have clear, definable answers. The answers are not in chiseling and tablets of stone. Thou shalt never insult anybody, because then there will be no communications. There will be no art. Safe art and bland speech are not the basis for community, for society, for family. We have rough edges where we bump into each other and we transgress. But if we're always careful never to transgress, we won't make contact. For me, the great issues are, how do we make contact with one another? Are there rules of engagement where we will not shed blood over insult. Right now, the entire world seems to be a little prickly, and nobody wants to be dissed. If you diss me, well, I'm going to get back in your face because you've insulted my person, my manhood, my people, my family, my tribe, all of us, everybody in the world, even a wealthy white male sitting in here, is somewhere along the line a minority somewhere. We owe each other, in terms of human dignity, the kind of consideration that we want for ourselves, that we want for our people. We can't simply be insulting others in a condescending manner just because we think that they can take it unless we expect an equal and opposite reaction to us, and often, if it's the powerful, an unequal reaction to us. We need to be aware, and by we I mean everyone, of all religions, ethnicities, genders, orientations, that all of us have places where we can be wounded. And the question is what we do when we are wounded and what kind of license that gives us and whether we have teaching moments that come out of our pain. Or if only anger comes out of our pain, and I would submit to you that that does not provoke a teaching moment. Anger provokes usually anger and usually a power struggle, maybe comparison of strength or comparison of victimhood. But when we have been hurt, we have an opportunity of sharing the source of the pain with outrage, without violence, without letting blood be spilled. It seems to me that when our various interests are insulted, that we have choices that we can make. And the last thing we should do, I believe, is to criminalize free speech. There was somebody arrested 2 days ago for using a racial epithet at a Burger King. No, I'm sorry, to Taco Bell. It's an important distinction. I need to correct myself. At a Taco Bell, and I am not speaking in favor of racial epithets. But when we criminalize rudeness, stupidity, we can all do time at some point or other in our lives. I misspoke again. It is not simply that going the legal route is the last place. Going the legal route is the second last place. Going the violence route when we feel we have been insulted is the last thing that we should do. We should teach. There is an abundance of ignorance, culture to culture. And this is a good time to learn and not simply to judge, to act with kindness and compassion in a straight manner when we are offended or we are offended by somebody being offended, but not just to react with blind rage. There are opportunities to blow up bridges and to build bridges in general. The world is better off as we build bridges, and we're better off when we choose to cross them, to try to bridge the cultural gaps, at least with information that can lead to understanding, that can lead to communication, that might lead to peace.